Hello, welcome to Unreal Bluegrass. I'm Steve Martin. My guest today is Mylon Miller, who you hear every program at the beginning of the program. Pick Piece was a tune that was written and performed for this show by Mylon Miller and Tom Utes. I'm so proud that they, and still just honored and stunned that they did it and said, here, take this because we like the concept. I do too. Mylon Miller has a brand new album out entitled Between Rhyme and Rhythm. And we're going to start the program off of this portion with Walking Home from Wexford, where he borrows in Tim O'Brien, pretty good singer. Then we're going to talk to Mylon about this album. I had a good time talking with Mylon. You'll see why. He's just got a very clever way of phrasing things, and you can pick up his cleverness in the songs that he writes and performs. It's not like a laugh out loud, but he has this clever wit about him, and I think in our discussion I liken it to John Hartford, where he always thought he had kind of a one of his lips and a half smile. So let's get started off with Walking Home from Wexford. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass.
Unreal Bluegrass, coming to you from the Gold Tone Music Group studio.
To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a new tune from Mylon Miller. The tune is Walking Home to Wexford. It's on a brand new album from Mylon Miller, Between the Rhythm and the Rhyme. And I have on the phone today my guest. And I've wanted to do this for a while, Mylon, and I haven't done it. And you sent me all this great music again, and you sent me a great little pen that has a dog on it that says "Write Songs, Pet Dogs." And I kept thinking, I got to get off this night and talk to Mylon. So, Mylon Miller, how are you doing?
I am doing great, Steve, and I am tickled to death that we're getting to finally do this.
I am too. I want to tell the audience too, because every time they listen to Unreal Bluegrass, the show starts off with an introductory thing. It was done by Tom Utes and Mylon Miller, and I credit both of them. It's called Pick Piece. That's kind of a theme of the show and a theme that I have personally, and I always credit Tom Utes and Mylon Miller. So now they're thinking, oh yeah, that's that guy we hear every show at the beginning.
That's it, and you know, it's like you never know what you can come up with when you've had a little too much coffee.
It's up tempo. Well, so tell me about this this brand new album, Between the Rhythm and the Rhyme, and remind the audience again the label. We'll talk about some of the guests you have on it because you have a lot of them, and then we'll talk specifically about that opening tune.
Sure. So it's on Melton and Miller Music. It's not a very creative name, but at least we know where it comes from. My old friend Buddy Melton from Balsam Ring,
yeah,
and I started this. You know, we call it a label because that's what it is, but we sometimes roll our eyes because it just seems weird that we would be in charge of anything in our world. But it started out as a way for us to release our own music. As you know, we made a duo record a few years ago. Had the song Adeline and, yeah, Will I Want To, and yeah, it was some things that I had written and things that maybe didn't fit within the context of Balsam Range at the time, but songs that we just liked. And so we made a duo record and decided, well, let's just see what happens. We'll put it out ourselves. And we enjoyed that. We enjoyed being able to be in charge of, you know, picking all of the songs and how it was produced and, you know, how it was recorded and sounded and promoted and all those things. And after we did the first one, we had the tools in place and started, you know, kept releasing our own music, but very quickly convinced Missy Armstrong. She was in the process of not working on the road as much as she'd been doing a lot of stuff with Detour, and always loved her voice. And so we're like, we don't care if you tour or not. Let's make records. and since then, we've added folks like Adam and Shannon Wright, and more recently, Woody Platt of the Steep Canyon Rangers, formerly. Yeah. And then we just did a single last fall with Gina Britt, and we'll likely be doing some more stuff. With Gina, we know that Sister Sadie is her main gig, and so we're very open and sensitive to that, and you know, we can work around that and do things when it makes sense for other people. So that's the label. The album is kind of a 2 year. It wasn't a labor of love because it wasn't intense and it wasn't difficult. It was just the world was a different place, and my original intent was to maybe put out a couple of singles. And then by the summer of 2020, the album would come out. And then COVID happened, and you know, things changed a lot just in terms of live performance and being able to get records done. And luckily, I have a studio here at the house, and living in Nashville, everybody else does too. And so we were able to make lots of this record. You know, like Seth Taylor plays lots of great stuff on this record, and he literally lives around the corner from me. But he's, you know, he's so good. I could just send him a file.
Send him a file.
And,
yeah.
And you know, I would wake up the next morning and have a great mandolin part or a great banjo part. You know, Aubrey Haney and, you know, oh, lots gosh. Of folks like that. We all figured out how to work and still, you know, be sensible and, you know, try to get through the COVID thing when it was in the, you know, in the throes of it.
You know, one thing there, and I would never say there's anything good that came out of COVID at all. But I think I think the skills that we learned and adapted to are exactly, now I know forever people have, as long as they could on the internet, have traded files and done that.
Sure.
But I think that we've really, musicians, I know I'm a lawyer in the court, we do things, we've finally figured out how to do things on a Zoom call, whereas before we had no idea. So we learned that, and I think that now the process that you're describing, which was not that unusual before, has now become so fluid. And like
right.
you said, you can give a cut to somebody, you can have a thing back the next day, and you can put it in your thing.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, you know, a lot, there's still a great feeling of being in the room and looking at people and getting inspired and all. And so, I will never completely let go of that. But there's also the thing that we have to say out loud of a lot of these guys like Aubrey Haney or Seth Taylor, the people playing, you know, Justin Moses or Gabriel, like guys who are playing on this level, they are so good.
Yep.
They play just like they were sitting there with five other guys and the track going down. I mean, it's really a credit. It's not just that they have a computer and a microphone.
Right,
it's just
right.
You know, they're that intuitive at what they do. But, yeah, I very much agree with you. A lot of the, you know, things as simple as now, at least in Nashville, you can make an appointment at the DMV to get your new, you know, driver's license instead of going down there and just being stupid mad for 8 hours waiting. It's like, let's hold on to that.
Well, I think that the good parts of that transition will stay, and we'll still be able to do put music together. If we want to do it live in the same thing, we can still do that too.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Over the process, I think everybody's up their game. And, so I think that's a good thing. There's very few good things.
And I was fortunate that I had a lot of those things in place before COVID happened, and it was already part of my workflow. And so I'm thankful that it didn't slow me down in terms of being able to record and work on stuff. But it did make me kind of hold back a little bit in terms of putting out a full album versus I think we got like five or six singles into this thing. We almost did it backwards compared to how things usually go. And instead of putting out the album, after a couple of singles.
I'm glad you put out the album. I'm talking to Mylon Miller, and we're gonna talk about the album Between the Rhythm and the Rhyme. He's described a little bit about the process there. I have 11 songs. I have 11 cuts. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Yeah. And we heard at the opening of the show, we heard Walking Home to Wexford, who you very wisely borrowed, Tim O'Brien's. Let me tell you this, too, about what I pick up from your... First of all, I think Mylon has a sense of humor, and I'll say this, not like you're going to slap your knee. It's not going to be listening to Homer and Jethro or the Cleverleys, but there's a smile and a sense of humor, much the way that John Hartford always had a crooked smile on his face, and he was writing songs, and they were kind of like, yeah, that's kind of funny. He's not trying to be hilarious, but it's clever to me, and maybe I just picked that up. But there are songs I have things, and I think you're just a very clever writer.
I like that. That makes me grin more than you can, you know, you obviously can't see me. But that makes me grin so much because a lot of times things that I do fall within novelty. And sometimes people laugh just because they don't know what other thing to do. It's like, I think he's maybe being funny, but that's so weird and quirky that it's not really a punchline. And sometimes I just, you know, it's just things to think about.
Yeah.
It's a different perspective that's interesting. And I would rather do that than write another, you know, another song that people like. You know, it's like watching a TV show, and 2 minutes into it, you know what's going to happen.
Exactly. That's right.
And I want songs to be, you know, something that they don't always have to have a twist, but at least things sprinkled in that make you want to listen to the second verse.
Yeah, well, and walking home to Wexford, well, I will tell the audience that they just heard it's a very upbeat. Not every tune on this has that same sort of immediate bluegrass. And talking about your sense of humor, everybody, I think, at least let's just say everybody east of the Mississippi has seen the Ruby Falls sign.
Right?
So, and you've got Ruby Still Falls, and I thought, I get it. I guess people still remember those signs, but, you know,
yeah,
Ruby,
I mean,
they're still around?
Interstates, yeah, it's just, yeah, if you get on I-24, they're still there on tops of the barn, you know, alternating.
Oh, they painted them,
with Sea Rock City.
Sea Rock City,
still,
and Ruby
Falls. There's billboards and stuff, yeah, they're holding on to that that ad campaign worked 50 years ago.
What was the Barbasol? They had those things out west where you would drive and there'd be like every couple miles there'd be a word and wind up being a sentence as you drive past them. And I think because nobody went to take them down, I think you can still find some on some of the back roads. But so that's what I mean. Yeah, and I saw that in the song. We'll talk about the song in a minute, but let's go back to the opening cut. Walking to Wexford, and I will say this too, and I distracted you. You also have a lot of history in a lot of your songs, and I try to catch up on what you're actually singing about. We'll talk about those later when they come up. But
great,
talk a little bit about Walking to Wexford that the audience just heard.
Well, it's a tune that I wrote with my friend Beth Husband. We write a lot of songs together, and it's I've been to Ireland a bunch, and some of my favorite people on the planet live in Ireland. I have friends over there that at this point are family, and it's the way of life there. This, obviously, the scenery is everything about it is inspiring to me. And for some weird reason, the idea for that chorus came to me. I was on a plane. I was filling in for one of the guys in Balsam Range, and we were flying to play at Grass Valley in California. And so I got on a plane in Nashville and was going to California. And for some reason, a song idea about Wexford, Ireland popped in my head, and I don't know why that happened. Maybe my system was telling me I was going in the wrong direction. You know, I don't know, but that's where the initial idea came from. But from just being over there in Ireland a lot, knowing the lay of the land, and I just wanted the track to have feel like you walked into a pub and would hear the traditional Irish guys playing.
And nobody cutting their fingers off their left hand.
Exactly.
And I hope that people know I'm not being overly cruel, but from the Banshees of Inisherin, that's kind of like the weird thing with the fiddle player. I don't know why I brought that up, that the guy cuts off his feckin' fingers is what he says. I think I can say that on the radio, but...
Well, if you can't, you'll get a bill.
I'll find out. Right. So I like that. So that's what they heard, and Yours Till Ruby Falls is upbeat, and we talked a little bit about the Ruby Falls. It's not about the signs. I didn't mean to indicate that, but I laughed when I saw the title. I thought,
Well, it is the obvious wink and nod to the whole.
But that's right.
If you don't know about that, the song probably
it'll mean nothing. Yeah,
it won't really mean anything, even though it has nothing to do with that.
Right, that's right. Yeah. It just happens to be somebody named Ruby, and one guy lucked out, another guy did not.
Right, but somebody fell, or maybe she was pushed. I don't know.
And you follow that, and here's the thing. One of the things I like about this album is there's so many different types of songs. The next cut on the album, Talking to Myself, is for some reason I really relate to this story, maybe because I used to drive around late at night for work a lot more than I do now, but I remember those times, and that's where it puts me back to. So if you can describe a little bit about Talking to Myself.
Well, it's, you know, I don't do a lot of it. I mean, it's kind of in the mid-tempo range, but for me, I guess it's more of a ballad feel of things that I would normally record. It was an idea that Beth Husband had, and we worked on it. And most of the time, my take on songwriting is more linear, and it's not necessarily always a story, but a beginning thought and an end thought, and you know what you're supposed to learn or what perspective I'm trying to put across in the song. This one is, it's more just a mood, and it's that thing you're yeah. talking about. Yeah. Everyone has been in that situation where you're in a car late at night, and it doesn't mean that you've had a good day or a bad day.
That's
or whatever,
right. yeah.
but you're just, you know, I will often do that. It just turn the radio down, but it's on and your headlights, and it's, you know, you start thinking about sorting through things, and it, like I say, it could be something really complicated you're trying to figure out, or it could be just something really simple,
yeah.
like, oh, what's my to-do list for tomorrow or whatever. Yeah. But there's a lot of good thinking that I've done in my life, whether it was coming back late from a gig or whatever it was.
Yeah, well, I agree with you 100%. There's certain about that solitude where, I mean, I hope that the entire time isn't like, what am I supposed to do tomorrow? But I think there's a calming effect.
Yeah.
And after a while, your mind is just like, you know, touching on things that maybe you alone need to hear and think about. You don't hear them unless you're
well,
talking
to yourself. Well, I admittedly, it's like I will ramble to myself sometimes, just trying to grab snippets of songs, or sometimes it's just like framing up an yeah. idea or things like that. But it's that late night. And it's I need another cup of coffee, and so musically. Trying to wrap a big blanket of that mood,
yeah, that's
as
good.
Well. It's not, it's, you know, it's a lyric, but it's also, you know, I kind of would, you know, thinking about what it sounds like, and I just want it to make folks have that feeling of sitting in the car.
It does, and it could be, it doesn't have to be in a car, but it could be anywhere where that solitude envelops you, and you can kind of just kind of, at some point, be still. And then let those things that are just personal to you,
right,
ruminate
right.
them down or talk about them. Do whatever you want to do, but just hear them. Just hear yourself, because sometimes you need to know those things. The next one
right.
after that is one that I have a little marked by. Distractions and Mr. X are two of the ones that kind of make me – Distractions first kind of makes me laugh.
That's my life. That is that song. I usually do not really write from personal experience because I'm so boring. But Distractions, that is me – the unfiltered version.
Yeah. The song is about the song is about distractions and a long litany of them, and just like right as you know, you don't have the your wherewithal ain't there at all. Which I think is great. That's a great description. Like all those things are
well,
happening.
It's really funny that you mentioned the word wherewithal. It seems like that's the first thing that when people hear that song. If they like it, that's the thing that they hone in on. It's like, you put wherewithal in a song. That's so cool. And that word almost didn't make it in the song because I was trying to convince myself that it was too weird. I'm glad at this point that it's in there, but because it's obviously catching lots of people's ear. And,
you know, and I don't know. I thought too, here's what I would have stopped at. Is it one word or three? Is it one of those where words that has everything, you know, this, where, that, for? And I kept thinking, well, you know, I don't know how you wrote it.
I think it's all spelling words like that would not be my strong point, but I did look it up, and it's I believe it's technically all one word. And my English teachers from high school can now write into your show and tell you that I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know. I had that too. Let's not forget musicians as we go by. And I want you. I'll bring you back every once in a while to talk about.
Okay.
Let's do that.
Yes.
We've talked about Tim O'Brien and Aubrey Haney and Seth, and let's just mention now some of the other players that you've added to this album, so that we don't let anybody languish there.
Yes, yes. Well, the all of the folks that you just mentioned again are the Tim O'Brien thing. It was a huge, huge treat for me. He's been an inspiration on many levels to what I try to do. I won't say what I do, but what I try to do. And it's just that he's always interesting, and he's always entertaining, and he's always doing something that no one else is doing in a way that completely works. And Seth and Aubrey are amazing. Gavin Largent plays a lot of great dobro on the record. He's a newer friend of mine, but the talent and tone that he has is really amazing. My old friend Terry Balk, I mean, how can you not just grin when he walks into a room? And that's the parts of this, you know, getting to do this stuff. And number one, you know, getting to have Terry play on songs, but becoming friends with him, or having Tim sing on a song, or Ronnie Bowman singing on a song. I mean,
How cool is that?
Like, well, and it's scary a little bit, but it's also, it's like, those are the guys that made me want to do this.
Yeah.
And so to have them a part of it and be able to call them friends, it means a lot to me. But it also means a lot to me to have folks like Missy Armstrong and Buddy Melton.
Sure.
You know, on there, because they're really, really good at what they do, and they, you know, they're great friends, and certainly help me be the best version of me that I can be.
Let's tell me a little bit about Mr. X. I played that recently in the show. I locked it. I think it was kind of one of those ones I smiled at a little bit, but I didn't think it was. But so I had that frame of mind that this is my Mr. X. I played it and. I like it. I'll probably play it again sometime, I'm sure, but Mr. X is an interesting it's like two different people.
Yeah, it's the only song on the record that I didn't have a hand in writing, and that was, you know, very much on purpose. This song, I've been aware of this song since maybe a couple of weeks after I moved to Nashville in 1999, and I had that experience that most people have when you move to Nashville. You think, you know, I'd written some songs and I thought that meant I was a songwriter. I could play guitar okay in the town I came from, and I thought, go down there, play some guitar. And then I got here and went, oh my goodness, what have I done? Yeah, and like I thought that I'd written songs, and I mean, quickly learned that I had no idea what I was doing on any of it. And so it's the, you know, immediately the point is like, well, I can turn around and I can go back to Waynesville, North Carolina, or I can get in the middle of this and see if these guys can teach me how to do this. And so Davis Raines wrote that song, Mr. X, and a bunch of other really, really great songs. He's become a dear friend and mentor, and he writes songs like people don't write them anymore. He's one part John Prine and Guy Clark.
Okay, that's a good
choice. But then he's also like Don Gibson and Hank Williams. He worked for like 15 years in the Alabama State Pen system, and for a good part of that time, he ran the death row cell block. So he's seen some things. He knows about humanity in ways that we will never understand. But he's got a master's in lit from Auburn, okay. And then at some point left all of that behind and moved to Nashville. And he's written songs for Kenny Rogers and Pam Tillis and Kelly Pickler, and he's done that thing. But it's his songs are just a different. They're smart. Human perspective, and I can remember the moment hearing him. You know, I'd never met him, but I'm in this place called the Sutler in Nashville that used to be a seedy place where songwriters and pickers would hold out, or, you know, hang out and hold court. And he starts playing the song, and I quickly tuned in that it's about a wrestler who wears a mask, and I thought it was going to be funny. I realized later that
it's touching.
That was
it's very touching.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like at first, like the language he was using, and it's about a wrestler wearing a mask. How could it be anything but funny?
Right.
And I was like, I was completely wrong, but he had tuned my ears to listen for the punchline, and you know, I learned later that's just a songwriting trick to make people listen. You got their attention, and now that you can tell them the actual story that you want them to hear, and it's like it's about a wrestler, and he doesn't want to be famous. He doesn't want to be a
famous.
Trying to be a husband and a father and make a living and get to the next town to do his job and get it done. And it was just such a lesson in this is how you put humanity in perspective in a song and get people's attention at the same time and make them want to listen to it. And it's not one of those, you know, a lot of the songs or most of the songs on the album is full production, full band and all that. And this one, it's just me on guitar and Gavin on dobro and the vocal, because it seems more appropriate. It's not a song where you play hot licks and things like that. It's just, you need the picture of the guy. In your mind, and you don't need anything, you know, pulling you away from that story, at least to me.
I like it. I want you to introduce Pirate Ship, and I will tell you this, when we come back, we're going to talk about more songs, plus a couple of tunes that are very, very of a historical significance, ones that send me to the books Let's do an intro to Pirate Ship. I like this song, too, for other reasons. But tell us about Pirate Ship. We'll play that, and I'll come back and talk to you.
Pirate Ship actually wasn't supposed to be on the record. The record was done, and it ended up knocking a very different kind of song off the record, because the more Beth Husband and I wrote this one, she had that, had the line, "Trade my plow for a pirate ship," and it immediately caught my ear. Oh, yeah, of course that's a song. And I think we first started working on it, and it was going to be a much more traditional bluegrass song, three chords, and maybe even lighthearted. And it's, but that hook line is lighthearted still, mm-hmm. but like the more that we worked on it, it turned into this character who maybe he's thinking the grass is greener, you know, you're looking at this other situation, but not really. To me, what that song is about is you've done this really miserable thing or this thing that you don't like for a long time. Just go do something else. Even if it's not perfect, yeah. Like you know, and that's, you know, well, you're giving up the plow and you're going to be a pirate, and yeah, that may seem glamorous for a minute, but it's probably going to be kind of miserable in a lot of ways.
I would think so.
I think there's a lot of
just from the movies I've seen, I probably don't want to do it for a lifetime.
Right, but I think there's a lot of me and a lot of other people that I know, and there's like at some point it's okay to just go do something different, even if it doesn't make sense.
I agree with you 100%. So we're going to, all right, Mylon did a great intro to Pirate Ship, which is on his brand new, Mylon Miller's brand new album, Between the Rhythm and the Rhyme. We're going to play Pirate Ship, and I'll come back and talk to Mylon about some more great music.
Unreal Bluegrass, coming to you from the Gold Tone Music Group studio.
All right, there it was, Pirate Ship, a tune that I like, because I think, I'm almost to that point every once in a while. I think we all go through that where you're thinking, yeah, the pirate ship is in the sky, or maybe it's a story I read when I was a kid, but, you know, it's kind of like might be good for a change. I like the song. I'm glad you picked that one.
Thank you. It's one that I seem to come, like if I just sit down still these days and just pick up the guitar and start strumming on something, I seem to still be playing that one just when I'm goofing around the house.
The you do this, history is a big part of Mylon's writing. I enjoy these type of writers, your type of writers, Tom Utes, Tim Stafford, and other ones, mm-hmm. that make me kind of think either I remember it or I have to go learn about it, which is what is good for me. There are two songs on here that I, Mile 59 and Ghost of Fort Granger, that kind uh-huh. of in that same kind of mode to me. You might want to talk about both of those, and then we'll get on with talk about some other music.
Great. Yeah, the history is it's almost part of the songwriter's handbook in bluegrass to me, and that's always a good play if I'm trying to find something to write about and I can't come up with an idea. Well, just start reading history books or something like that, and there's always interesting stories. Mile 59 is a tale that I found about. It was based about around the building of a railroad close to outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And the part that registered in my brain immediately. And it's it's a story of immigrants that we know, and it's the history of America. These Irish guys moved to America to do the work that nobody else wanted to do. Yeah. And it was like the Mile 59 was the stretch of the railroad that they were clearing the path. So that they weren't building the railroad. They were, clearing the path for it. And it was the most treacherous stretch, and they couldn't get anybody else to do the work. And so these 50-some-odd Irish guys came over from Donegal on a ship and came to do the work, and they were, of course, not paid very well, and their living conditions were awful. The best that we can figure, they found this mass.
Yeah, there's a bad ending to their journey.
Yeah, they found some archaeologists found this mass grave just a few years ago and were able, they're still putting together pieces, but at least, a general idea of, it seems like they all got cholera, and then the question, and there's, you know, they all died in some form or another, but what the question from some of the wounds and things on the bodies that they found, the question is, were they, some of them were killed, and what we don't know is, were they mercy killings? Were they already so sick and past going that someone said, you know, the kind of thing we can do in 1830 is, you know, kill you? And or was it fear of, because there were surrounding villages where it seems like some of the men tried to go get help and didn't necessarily get it, and so there's other theories wondering if it was if they were killed because the people in the surrounding villages were afraid they were going to get sick, and so they.
I mean, that's. I mean, back in the. That's not. That could happen. That could happen.
Yeah. That's. And that's. And there's a. There's. There's. A line in the song, was it murder or mercy? The questions remain. That's what that's talking about.
I'm talking to Mylon Miller. If you're just tuning in, you've missed a lot of great stuff. But so are we pretty certain? And I say we, not you and me, but are the historians, the archaeologists, are they pretty certain these are identifiable people from that travel from Ireland?
Yes. Okay. They were the guy that they were able to identify first. His name was John Ruddy, and he was from County Donegal. And they've been able to loosely trace it back to he went down and got on a ship on the Kerry coast, which is down Dingle on the left coast of Ireland, lower on the left coast. And that's probably where the ship of the guys came from. But they've traced most of them, the ones that they've been able to identify so far, traced them back to County Donegal.
Okay.
And they're still, as they can get funding, they're digging up and doing the research. But they've you know been able to analyze the wounds and you know their skulls were cracked and they have evidence of cholera being there. So there's science way beyond what I can understand going into the equation, but. Not a warm and fuzzy story.
No,
it is kind of a story of how we grew as a nation.
Yeah, and speaking of warm and fuzzy, the ghost of Fort Granger is I looked that up because I knew it was a real thing, but you have a song in here. I want to ask you about that. Then I'm going to talk a little bit about the very last song on it. Then we're going to play. You have ghosts in a couple of your songs, including the last one we're going to play for the audience is Callie Colin. But
ghosts are fun.
Yeah, and pirates. Look, Mylon Miller's got an album about ghosts and pirates. I mean, come on.
we're doing all the things in bluegrass. You're not supposed to talk about pirates in bluegrass. You know.
That was Bill Monroe from Mylon Miller. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
tip your waitress; he'll be here all night.
So. Right, son, you can't say that.
Listen, you can keep the Bill Monroe voice as he described Fort of Joseph, or you can use your own, or both. I don't care.
Well, we both might get in trouble if I stay in Bill Monroe Bill Monroe character because that would quickly go probably into rightfully so. We've learned some things. Ghost of Fort Granger is another tune that Beth and I wrote. And Fort Granger is an actual place in Franklin, Tennessee, just down the road from where I live in Nashville. It was, you know, Franklin was a big Civil War spot. So that is the only thing real in that song. Everything else is just a fictional tale that we made up about a
young soldier.
Yeah, Union soldier worked. It was a Union fort, and so it's from the perspective of a Union soldier who sees a slave family escaping and coming across the Harpeth River, which is right there at where the fort is, and. The story unfolds and there's a bit of a twist there where the ghost comes into play. But
I'll say let them hear it. I'll play it in the first.
Yeah, hour it's and again that's another one of those where it's got Brian Sutton on the Clawhammer banjo. People always know that he is obviously like one of the greatest guitar players on planet Earth. He's really, really good at clawhammer.
A lot of stuff. That's a good banjo addition to it too. The clawhammer.
He's kind of over on the left side of the speakers, and Aubrey Haney playing fiddle on the right. And that's it. I wanted this kind of old time feel to it, but also a really sparse track, because that story is one of those where I just wanted to create a mood of being out there seeing a guy crossing the river, and it's foggy and it's dark, and to focus more on the lyric in that one.
You did it. The last cut on the album, I really liked this. I'll pronounce it, what, Nolichucky River?
Nolichucky, yes.
And the thing that I like, the story, I like what you're singing about. It's got a nice tempo to it, but the rhythm of the words that you use, how do I describe this? There's a rhythm in your words. They could almost be just tracking words, but the rhythm of the words that you use to get to the part where you say the name of the river, it's just a very punchy, and I feel like I've divined more than I should have, but I feel to me like I like the way the rhythm of the words work as you get to the title back.
All of that is on purpose. I really like stuff like that. That word nerdery, for lack of a better description.
Okay.
I really like stuff like that.
That's
what makes songwriting interesting to me, when you can create effects like that. It goes beyond the melody. It's like where the words are doing a lot of heavy lifting, by the way that they just roll off your tongue,
and the way they sound and their precision, and it's almost
my friend Jeff McClellan, who lives up around Kingsport, he had the idea for that, and because he had seen the Nolichucky River is over that way, East Tennessee. I grew up just across the line from where it is in North Carolina, and I had no idea. I'd never heard of it, which is an indication I probably should have gotten out of the house more when I was a kid, instead of banging on a guitar in the back bedroom. But that's another story.
The Nolichucky can be your pirate ship, okay?
Yeah, exactly. But it's like there was something about the word when he was telling me about the idea.
I love it.
And all I could come up with was like, we just have to, you know, we both agreed, say Nolichucky as many times as possible.
That's right.
Like that's where the money and
that's
the song is.
Yep.
And the other thing we talked about is, like, I think just by default in bluegrass, when people see the word river in a song title, you know where their mind goes,
right?
It's just like, oh, that poor girl.
Yep.
Why did she go down there? And if we just, like, we agreed we're not going to do that. That's been done. It serves its purpose. And, you know, and I have done it. And then even wrote a song for Missy Armstrong, I Ain't Going Down to the River, you know, where the girl is saying, okay, I'm wised up. But we want to know the Chucky
they
River.
They always go, but they always
they
go.
Always
down
go.
There.
They
come
do. So we wanted Nolichucky River to be
like
nothing
it.
About that.
It's great. So, well, you did it, I kept thinking, man, this is such the sound of the words. Like I said, you could almost not have – you could just have tracking words or words, and by that I just mean clean, but just those chunky little words that lead up, and the rhythm of the words is almost, and you lead up to the name of the river, and it's a great effect. You did a wonderful job. It was a great idea.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I got it. I'm proud to say I got it. So I want to do this then. We've talked about most of everything on the album between rhythm and the rhyme, and I'm talking to Mylon Miller. Mylon, I've asked you to introduce one more ghost song. You have two ghost songs. Callie Calling. Introduce that one. I'll play it for the audience, and then as that's playing, I'll say goodbye to you. I'll let you go.
Callie Calling, it's one of my favorites, and it's interesting, like, where ideas for songs for me come from. I heard Merle Haggard talking one time. He was listening to the radio driving somewhere, and he was saying this in an interview, and he said, I heard Johnny Cash doing Folsom Prison Blues, and I thought to myself, I need a song like that. I need a blues song. And he wrote Working Man Blues. And it's not ripping off that song, but it's a song like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was cutting my grass. It was about 175 degrees in the middle of the summer here in Nashville. And I was cutting my grass, and I was listening to music in my earphones. And the Dreadful Snakes came on, and it was just shuffling, and the Dreadful Snakes, Who's That Knocking at Your Door, came on, and it was like, you know, I'm sweating, and it was like this epiphany. I like that song sounded like rock and roll to me, And it occurred to me, I was like, there hasn't been anything that I can think of in a really long time with that feel on bluegrass radio.
Okay.
And it's, you know, it's spooky, but it's like, it's not really fast. It's just, it's kind of gnarly and swampy. And so Beth and I went to work just creating this character, this guy who's, he's unsavory and he's not nice. And, you know, he did Miss Callie in, but she's slowly but surely getting her revenge. Nice. And so it's, that's the story, but the feel of the track was, you know, it was really glued together by Terry Balcom. He came in and did this low-tuned banjo thing. He said it was a tuning that John Hartford would use, some kind of low F thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It just, like, the second he started doing that with the other instruments, it was the glue, and it completely just gave everything the spooky vibe that song needed.
Okay. We didn't talk about one song. I'm probably going to play it in the program, but Trout Don't Live Where It's in Ugly Places. I like that song because I don't know. I'll play that in the show. Maybe I don't want to keep it too long to talk about it, but
is great.
But it's a song about what makes perfect sense. Well, first you think, well, let's go ahead and do this. First you think, well, what do you mean they don't live? Well, if you're out with the trout, you're in a beautiful spot.
Right.
That's right.
It's really that simple, and that's one of those that. It's novelty. It's lighthearted, kind of. But there's a lot of... It's like, if you really pay attention there's a whole lot of truth in there.
I've never seen anyone... I see pictures all the time from artists that I know, and they're pulling these trout, and you probably know the one spends all his time in Carolina, was in Steep Canyon Rangers, the base.
Yeah.
He's fished every trout out of the state, and he does. And I'm thinking, yeah, he's never in an ugly place when he pulls those up.
Yeah, he never is. That's just funny how that works out.
Yeah.
And the first line of that song, I'm no good with a rod and reel, I have never written anything more truthful. I mean, I'm awful. Like, if I go fishing, I don't take a pole. I mean, I am the worst.
I've never gone trout fishing. Growing up in Kentucky, we fished every little lake until the owners woke up and shoot us off. But there were no trout there. We were just throwing lines in the water to catch stuff.
I'm terrible. Like, my dad is great, and I can remember a time he would even tie his own flies, and he was all into it. And I know that it always frustrated him beyond belief that it wasn't something that I could just get the feel for. I enjoyed the thought of it, but I'm just terrible at it.
And that's the story of a river runs through it. You were the guy that wasn't great at it. You were the brother.
Yeah, yeah.
But he lived.
You know, yeah, it's like skiing. I hate skiing, but I'll hang out at the lodge all day. You know, that part is fun.
Yeah, that is fun. All right, let's do this. Thanks, Milo, for being available and giving me this great music. And so we're going to play Callie Calling, and I'm going to say goodbye to you. You're welcome back anytime. And
Thank you,
appreciate
Steve.
You. People have heard your music. Every show they hear your name, and a credit to you for the opening tune to this program has been for years and years and years, and I appreciate everything that you do. I'll let you go. The audience will listen to Callie Calling from Between the Rhythm and the Rhyme by Milo Miller. Thanks, Milo.
Thank you, Steve.